Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. With me is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. How many weeks in a row is this now we've got you, Sean?
What is this? I think it's our fourth right now, Jim.
I think it is. You're like an old timer now, old, experienced, you used to it.
I'm in the flow now, and I've enjoyed it very much.
No longer a newbie, no longer a rookie. You're now considered a veteran of the show. As I said before, Sean will be joining us for the foreseeable future now on something that we call Sean's Take. And Sean and I will be talking about all things sports, not just college football. Last few weeks, we've been talking a lot about March Madness. Sean is also great about making some picks. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you, Sean, and the rest of your information?
Yeah, everything that I've got at Sean's Take. It's S-H-A-U-N-S-T-A-K-E on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. You can search Sean's Take on YouTube. I post a bit there as well. And then we also have seanstake.com. That more funnels you to all the social medias, but it's everything in one place. So I definitely, encourage you to follow on social media, get in on the discussions. Jim, I've got a tweet going on right now with some sports bettors getting into strategy and everything. So it's fun to be in the discussion and, you know, kind of debate some sports, talk whatever you want. That's what we're all about.
Well, before this show is over, we'll get your picks for the Final Four, so we will definitely get to that. And then in the next couple of weeks, I know it's a great sports time right now. We got baseball season started, which I'm thrilled about. Love baseball. The cool thing about baseball, if you're looking to wager on it, you've got games, many games every day, Sean. You could pick and choose what you want.
You do. And, you know, I put out a post before the MLB season started. I call it over 1,200. I think there's 1,240 total games or something like that. The number might be a little off there. But that's 1,200 opportunities for you, Jim, to be able to get in the market and find your edge in the MLB.
Well, I'm a big Mets fan. When I think wagering in baseball, and I didn't mean to get off on this tangent, we're going to get back to March Madness. But when I think wagering baseball games, I'm thinking pitching. I'm thinking about the pitcher starting the game for your team.
Yep. Starting pitching has so much to do with it. And I'm sure we could spend a future episode for us talking about all the different baseball bets you can make. I mean, there's no run first inning bets that people love. There's a lot of exciting ways to get involved in the MLB.
There really is. The one thing that I think I've learned, or I theorize at least, is that those stud pitchers in the beginning of the season might not be as much a good bet as they are later in a season. You have folks going four innings, five innings, even some of the best pitchers. They're limiting their pitches early in the season, so that great starting pitching effect is not as great in March and April as it might be in June.
You definitely want to see your ace healthy and productive down the stretch when games matter most.
Exactly. And I'll tell you what, just my last thought on it. I don't know if you saw it. Come opening day, I always say that should be a national holiday. My Mets were starting out with the Pirates, which you think, hey, that should be helpful for them. Except for that first game, they have to battle Paul Skenes. Skenes didn't make it out of the first inning, Sean.
And that shows exactly like you said, the star pitchers. We know Paul Skenes is going to have a phenomenal season, but you can get him on him early when things weren't exactly clicking. And, I think a lot of people got on maybe O'Neill Cruz for some defensive malfunctions there as well that really did hurt Paul Skenes. But that was a shocker for everybody in the MLB on opening day.
I'm glad you brought that up. If I'm Paul Skenes, I just say I don't want to see that guy out in center field ever again when I'm starting. So anyway, hey, let's move on to tournament basketball, March Madness. It was real madness, but let's start here, Sean. How you doing with your Final Four? How you doing with your bracket?
Well, you know, Jim, I'm in a good spot actually. Now I had Houston in the finals, so that, you know, that part is dead, but I had Michigan and Arizona, which I'm sure a lot of people had Michigan and Arizona here too, but I also had UConn in my Final Four. And, you know, looking at a couple of the bracket pools I'm in, if we indeed get a UConn Arizona finals, I'm sitting really pretty because a lot of people had teams that were out now. So 3 out of 4 for the Final Four. I'm not overly disappointed about that.
You son of a gun, you getting UConn. You and I, maybe it's because we've talked so much together. Our Final Four was very similar, very similar. We went chalk with Arizona and Michigan. We both liked Houston. We both had them going to the Final Four. That very much disappointed me. And the difference was I had Duke. You had UConn. I was feeling pretty good for the majority of that UConn-Duke game.
I'm sure you and a massive amount of people were feeling very good. At halftime, you know, I was holding on hope. I was just thinking it's March Madness. Can at 10 minutes, you know, this be a 5-point game? And I don't think it was quite there at the 10-minute mark. I think it took them a little bit longer to really mount the comeback because it's not like, you know, first, second out of the second half, UConn was just storming back. It took them a little while. And so I was losing hope. And then you get down to the final couple minutes and it's just as hectic as it can get. And we saw one of the shots in March Madness that will be shown for years to come. And there's a lot of different things you can talk about. The great shot, the great comeback. But Jim, I mean, as somebody who was on Duke like yourself, I don't know how they ever let the game get to what it became.
Well, we're going to take a real close look at that end in a little bit. But it also hits just this heartbreak that these players go through, especially now, you know, it's hard to feel sorry for these guys who are one and done. They're going to go off to the NBA, get the huge contracts. But the thing is, it's a singular opportunity then to go through this and to lose that way. That is heartbreaking. But let's look first the overview. Let's look at the rest of the Final Four and how they got there to the Elite Eight. We talked about Michigan and Arizona being the chalk, the number one seeds in their region. Let's start with Michigan. A dominant performance over Tennessee. Again, a Tennessee team that kind of snuck into that Elite Eight. I think we were all expecting Michigan with a solid win. I'm not sure we were looking for a 30-point rout there.
Yeah, 30 points was definitely a lot there. I kind of viewed Michigan as, you know, there's only 3 or 4 teams in the country that can beat them. One of them is Arizona, who they're about to battle. Another, Purdue, we saw them win. You could say, hey, you know, maybe Duke would have stood a chance if they were playing them. So to see what Michigan's done, I think they've done everything that they were supposed to do. You know, the blowouts were a lot, but I'm not going to lie, I'm not totally surprised. Like, same thing with Alabama. I really liked Alabama, but I remember, you know, we talked about it. I like Alabama until you play a team like Michigan. Michigan's just a different beast. They dominate the paint. They have the size to both score in the paint and defend the paint really well. And if you don't have a roster that can just man up against them like that, it's going to be really tough sledding. And that's why the Arizona game is going to be so exciting, because they both have bigs who can get down, get physical, and it's going to be a real battle down low, which you don't see a ton in today's day and age of college basketball, where everything has become, you know, so much more guard-oriented. But Michigan's been a different beast all season long, and I think they just flexed their muscles against a Tennessee team that, you know, everyone was kind of hoping could hang in there, and you just saw them run out of gas as the game went on.
And that is what we typically see in the March Madness in this tournament. Early on, you get the upsets. When we get to this point, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, the teams start to separate themselves. And you make an interesting point when you talk about Michigan and their ability, their bigs. Score inside, defend inside. It's nice if you're a team in this kind of tournament to have something you could hang your hat on, wherever it is. Is it, you know, the guard play that is just better than anybody else's? Are you the team that can just shoot the lights out no matter what? Or are you a team with the size differential, could go inside and own a game? And when you see a team like Michigan with that ability, that's a separator.
It definitely is. And it's, you know, the talent level just did not seem the same on the court when, and Tennessee was a great team. I mean, they were there for a reason, but like you said, you get to a point later where teams just kind of separate themselves, and you can clearly see that Michigan is not on the same level as the teams they've played, which is why, you know, this Final Four matchup between them and Arizona is going to be so exciting, because we finally have two teams that are evenly matched, and you're going to see these powerhouses just duke it out in the court.
You know, that's it. When we got into this tournament, and we were talking initially about, okay, who's on that top line? Who are the three number one seeds? They're obvious, you know, Duke, Arizona, Michigan. They separated themselves in the regular season. Our conversation was, who would be that fourth number one seed? It was Florida. You and I discussed who really deserves it. We both like Houston. Not to say they should have been there as a number one seed, but we both were, hey, we both put them in our Final Four in our prediction. So that let you know what we thought of them. But the ultimate is, when you get two of those top three teams playing each other, that's when things get really interesting.
It is. And you said this the other week too, you know, everybody loves the upsets in the early rounds, but when you get to the Elite Eight, the Final Four, you want as competitive a basketball as you can get. And we kind of saw it with, you know, Michigan versus Tennessee. It wasn't a competitive game. So would you have rather a two seed been playing Michigan? Like I think Iowa State maybe in their portion of the bracket. I forget who exactly it was, but would you have rather seen that two seed there where it's maybe, you know, a 5-point game down to the wire instead of a 30-point blowout this late in the tournament?
Yes, that is exactly it. The first weekend, we want to see Cinderella. As the tournament advances, we want to see Goliath versus Goliath. And that's what we're going to get with Arizona, Michigan. And hey, that's what we got last week with Duke and UConn. Okay. Two Goliaths, two blue bloods, two teams with such a great history. I'll tell you what, that ending was so special with Duke and UConn. When we come back, we're going to devote a good part of quarter number two to that finish. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two of our show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. Sean, before we get going with our conversation, just a reminder, this Thursday, April 2nd, Pine Grove Hall. Any of you in New York State College, you got to get out there. It's a great venue. We're doing the second of our series of shows during the off season with Happy Valley United Insider, HVU Insider, exclusive shows where we're going to get players, staff members, coaches. We're going to get a chance to interview them. You're going to get a chance to meet them. It's a fantastic venue. I'm there with our buddy Chris Buccanani, who you all know, Mike Villagrana, executive director of HVU. So a lot of folks to talk to, have a good time at the venue. Great place, great venue, great atmosphere, also a great menu, and they have some tremendous beers on tap. We already know some of the players that are going to be there with us. Cam Wallace, Caleb Brewer, and Vaya Akakula. I hope I pronounced that right. He's a new offensive lineman. Came over from Iowa State in that mass exodus from Ames to State College. We'll be talking to those players. You'll get a chance to meet them. It's a great time. Again, Pine Grove Hall, Thursday at 6 p.m. All right, Sean, I promised we would talk Duke-UConn. We'll get there in a second. Just a minute or two, though. First, Arizona beat Purdue. 79-64 was the final. Purdue actually had the lead there at halftime. Purdue was playing them well. I do think Purdue, as you mentioned earlier, is a team that could compete with this type of team, those elite teams. Hey, we saw them beat Michigan in the Big Ten tournament, but Arizona ended up being a little bit too much for them.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Purdue, 7-point lead at halftime. Everybody was worried about Arizona in that exact moment. And then just a dominating 48-26 was the second half score there. Like this game was not close. And it just shows, you know, how deep Arizona is, how well put together they are. One thing I will say, though, against Michigan, I don't want to see Arizona start out slow like that, because Michigan and Purdue, now I know Purdue won the Big Ten and everything, but I think we've always agreed that Michigan, push come to shove, is a better team here. They might not let you back in a game like that. And if they have the momentum, I get the sense they're not a team that gives it up. You know, you're not going to get a UConn-Duke comeback against a team like Michigan. They're just built better than that. So Arizona, though, when they play their best basketball, I think they're one of the best teams, if not the best team in the country, and we all know that. So it's going to be very interesting to see the first half, because you can't have a lax first half again at this stage in the tournament now.
And the other thing that I found interesting, I was talking earlier about having something you could hang your hat on, whether it's your bigs, your outside shooting, point guard play. Purdue has one of the better point guards in the country in Braden Smith. Mm-hmm. Really good player. Saw him during the regular season, but he was not the same kind of factor in this game. This was a new level that he was playing against with Arizona.
Yep, and you saw it. I mean, 4 for 15. I think if you're playing against Purdue and you're saying we're going to hold Smith to 4 for 15 shooting, you're extremely happy with that, you know, with that defense performance there. And we saw exactly like you just said, Arizona was just a different type of team that could key in on him, get him tough shots, and not make his life as easy as it had been in some of these other matchups.
Let's shift gears to the big game that took place. UConn-Duke. There is no greater matchup of blue blood so far in this tournament than this game. So great game to see. But before we get into it, I find it interesting. When I don't watch a lot of the pregame show stuff, the quote-unquote experts telling us what's going to happen. But occasionally, you know, I turn the game on and it's a couple minutes early, so you're getting the last thoughts of these folks. Or maybe it's halftime. And it's funny, a couple of the quotes that just stuck out to me during this tournament, like, for example, earlier in the tournament, remember Florida looking really good in their first game? And I think if you contrast that with, say, how Duke looked in their first game, not very good. And one of the talking heads was, wow, you know, Florida just looks so good in this tournament. They lost the very next game in an upset. And then it happened to be halftime of the Duke-UConn game. And again, the talking heads, I just can't see UConn coming to back in this game. Just can't see it. Not enough firepower, not against Duke. It's not going to happen. Well, Sean, it happened.
It happened, and I think it just shows, you know, it encompasses, one, the fight that a team has to have, but I think it also speaks volumes to Dan Hurley, who – we've known he's one of the best coaches, you know, in college basketball, if not the best. I believe he's the highest paid on, you know, on his new contract. But it just shows how you can get a team ready to go. And the fundamentals that they got back to led to them being able to mount this comeback. And Jim, a player that I want to highlight, I know everybody, you know, talking about Braylon Mullins, who hit the shot, which credit deserved there, but Terrace Reed, the UConn center, that he makes this team go round. And we have to remember, he got in foul trouble a little bit in the first half, which very much affected their game plan because they didn't want him, you know, body to body against anybody in the paint in case another foul got called. But 26 points, 9 rebounds. I mean, he is their motor and he is a problem. And I don't know if everybody watched, you know, their first game against Furman, not exactly the greatest matchup of all time. He had 27 rebounds to open up March Madness. 31 points, 27 rebounds. That's not normal, Jim. That's not normal in college basketball. So I just love watching him because he brings the energy and he's just a phenomenal player. And he is a problem for opponents on the court.
Well, before we get into especially that late in the game sequence, I wanted to ask you that. You mentioned Hurley, the coach. I mean, he has 2 national championships in the last 3 years, another Final Four appearance at minimum this year. It's that, is there a situation where coaches know how to win?
I think that definitely is a thing. And I think we've seen the inverse happen since Coach K actually left Duke. Last year, Duke had a double-digit lead in the tournament. I forget what exact round they got knocked out in, but they had Cooper Flagg, by far the best player in college basketball, and they're blowing big leads in March Madness. To me, there's issues that Duke had on the court from the player perspective. Stupid mistakes, bad turnovers. We saw that lose them the game. But you were up by 19 at one point. To me, big leads getting blown, a lot of times coaching is a big part of that as well. And I think there's more experience that Dan Hurley has with winning than Duke has, you know, had since Coach K left. And I think that did play a big factor in this game.
You know, I remember for years I had this conversation. Remember, I'm a guy who spent many, many years in Philadelphia, followed Big High basketball very closely. And the Jay Wright, coach at Villanova, couldn't win the big games, couldn't win come tournament time. And I often use it came up often in conversations about James Franklin with Penn State football, is they can't win the big game until they do. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, you have to have that breakthrough moment. You got to get there. And, you know, Jay Wright just couldn't get there until he did. And once he did, the narrative changed, all of that. There was a time when Dabo Swinney from Clemson was looking, I mean, it was called Clemsoning, you know, that you couldn't win a big game until he did. And now you see that Duke, they've had very good teams. Hey, you mentioned Cooper Flagg, but they had, you know, multiple top 10 draft picks on that team a year ago. So they were a very good team, couldn't get there. He gets another really good team with one of the top players in the country, so he could obviously recruit. I'm sure Duke invests in their basketball team and the amount of money that will get you talent there. And they get the team's top of the ACC, number one among the top line seeds with their team this year, good enough to get double digit lead against a very good UConn team. John Schreier, when is he gonna have his moment where he makes that breakthrough? Because I'm convinced that it's gonna happen.
I undoubtedly think it's gonna happen. And I will say, I think for his sake, it's gotta happen soon. Because one thing I can tell you is Duke basketball is not gonna be a very patient program. They expect you're winning national champions, you know, championships a couple times every decade, pretty much. Like, that's the standard that had been set for so long. And if Duke doesn't have a breakthrough in the next 2 to 3 years, there's gonna be a lot of talk. It kind of reminds me of Ryan Day with Ohio State. Like you said, he was on the verge of getting fired and then became, you're the best coach in all of college football. You know, the narrative can switch very, very quickly here. But like you said, you're not it until you get over and you win the big game. And I think we're just waiting for that moment.
Do you know what? Ryan Day is a perfect example. I'm set in my ways. I've been using Jay Wright, Dabo Swinney as my example. Ryan Day is probably the better example. And probably that's a great comparison to Duke. Tremendous history, national championships in the past. They always bring in elite talent, have among the best talent. They've been winning regular season games, conference titles, just could not get over that hump for the national championship. And what's even more fascinating about Ryan Day is, boy, if they didn't go from the expanded, 14 to 12 team playoffs, he would not have made the playoffs his national championship year, Sean.
And he could be not in the Ohio State program if that were the case as well.
That is exactly it. If it wasn't for that change, he would not have even gotten the opportunity to win. So I'm kind of getting us off track here. I didn't mean to do that, but you have with John Schreyer at Duke, he's got to deal with that now, the pressure, the conversation. It's like in golf where they say, who's the best golfer who's never won, a major championship, a major? Well, now it's like, okay, he's the coach, maybe the best, who hasn't won a national championship. We'll see what he does in the next couple of years. When we come back, Sean, what I want to do is I want to go through it second by second, that ending to Duke UConn, and see what you would have done differently when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V, empowered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. It's quarter number three of our show. Sean, I was ready to say we're all things March Madness, but we kind of got ourselves off on a tangent a little bit. I'll take blame for that, but I want to refocus. I want to talk about this Duke-UConn game because, Sean, as you pointed out, this is going to be one of those historic shots, games. It's like Christian Laettner in 1992 at the Spectrum in Philadelphia. Length of the court pass, makes the hoop, they win. Historic. It's Christian Laettner is a legend because of that. It can still be talked about. It's still remembered. Is this that kind of level play here, Sean?
I don't know if it's that magnitude. We'll have to see. Like if UConn ends up winning the entire tournament, I think that only adds to what this shot was. But this is going to be a shot that we are going to see it for years to come. And on the March Madness pre-rolls before every tournament from here till the end of time, this play, I can almost guarantee, will be featured in the March Madness hype train.
Yes, it will. It has to be. And let's get to it. You had mentioned, Duke in this game had a big lead. And a couple of the numbers in the second half, 8 turnovers by Duke in the second half, 3 turnovers in their last 7 possessions, 2 turnovers in that last minute or so, and UConn took advantage of that. So that all of that just kind of sets us up for this end. So let's start with this. UConn player on the foul line makes the second of 2. I believe he missed the first. That puts UConn within 2 points. There's 10 seconds left in the game. UConn takes the ball out at that point. First question, Sean. There's 10 seconds left. Your team has a 2-point lead. It's after a basket, so your guy taking the ball out could run the length of the baseline. He's not locked in where he is. Duke has a timeout remaining. Should he have called timeout at that point?
That's the point that I was going to bring up is clearly they were frazzled. Clearly the past couple minutes had not gone incredibly well for Duke. That was no secret. Like, the momentum was not in Duke's hands at that point of the game. Why would you not just call timeout, draw something up, get everybody to calm down? Even if you knew, I'm sure they had their, like, you know, the set play of this is where the ball is going to go, first three passes, whatever. That was probably all already scripted and every player knew. But clearly, momentum was not on your side. Get a timeout, relax a little bit, draw it up on the whiteboard. Coach says, we're going to go win this game, protect the ball. If you get trapped here, do this. Don't panic. Like, all that stuff could have been addressed very easily. And instead, in the heat of the moment, you let them play. And that was my biggest takeaway is there's a timeout here. Just reset everything. Draw it up. Relax. Calm the nerves. And go into it with a clear mind.
Okay. I'm going to play devil's advocate here because I think it's so easy when things go wrong to say, why didn't you do this? Okay. And you guys, just like you guys, Sean, in the media, no matter if it ends up, it's Monday morning quarterbacking. It's after the fact. Let me give the counter to it, which is this. If you call timeout, you give UConn the opportunity to settle down and set up their defense. Okay. What you also do, I believe if they call timeout, I believe it would have been their last one, mm-hmm. correct?
Yep.
So now if you try to take the ball out without a timeout, what happens if you can't get that first pass inbounds? You want to be able to have that timeout remaining. You lose that. And believe me, if things had rolled out that way, mm-hmm. you people, Sean, you people would be blaming him for using that timeout instead of quickly getting the ball in bounds. That's one of the advantages of not calling the timeout mm-hmm. is before UConn could really set their defense, could you get the ball in? And by the way, they did. They did get the inbounds pass in there quite successfully.
They definitely did. And I think the other, you know, the other issue is like the first pass was good. The second pass was good. You got it to a third player. At some point, you need to be okay getting fouled. Time was running out. UConn can't trap forever, right? So hold the ball, let them foul you, go to the free throw line. And I think that would have put Duke in the double bonus. So I think it would have actually been two guaranteed shots, even if it wasn't though, and you missed the first of a one-on-one. There's still so much hectic that needs to go on, and UConn would have to call a timeout. So then, Duke, you could have set up your defense to not let them get a three-point shot. I would still have liked to see a timeout be called, even if it was after the first inbound. But it doesn't excuse the other errors that happened on that play.
And let's talk about them. Let's talk about the point that you bring up is at this point. And this is another one of those things that's being brought up by a lot of people is they made multiple passes successfully. Mm-hmm. The inbounds pass, the second pass, the third pass, and each one advanced the ball down the court. In fact, they did that very quickly when the last Duke player, which is the other Boozer, got the ball. There was still 7 seconds remaining at that point. So the argument is, why is he in a rush to pass the ball? Shouldn't he have just held on to it, get fouled, and go to the foul line? If he had, there still would have been 7 seconds left for UConn. And even if you make, if you make both foul shots, you're up 4, you're in really good shape. But hey, this is not your normal standard situation in a game in mid-January when you're up by 10 points with a minute to go. This is an Elite Eight game. This is a game to get you to the Final Four. Nerves are part of the equation. He very easily could have made only 1 out of 2. Mm-hmm. Now you have UConn with 7 seconds left, which is a lot of time to set up a play, even if it has to be a three-pointer to tie the game. There's still a lot of time to do that, isn't there, Sean?
There definitely is. And actually, I'll go a little devil's advocate, you know, back at you with the same scenario. I'm very happy that Dan Hurley didn't call timeout once they gained possession of the ball, because talk about, you know, play in motion. And a lot of times on these final, you know, 5 seconds when a turnover happens, coaches oftentimes won't call timeout there because you just had this huge momentum swing of getting the ball back. Let your guys set it up. Like, let the flow of the game happen. Duke's not organized at this point. UConn wasn't exactly organized when they got the ball. But instead of calling timeout and giving Duke now the chance to set their defense for you to drop a three-point play, just let your guys do what they do. And I'm really happy Dan Hurley did that and didn't, hey, we have possession, timeout immediately, let's set something up. Like, the flow of the game worked out very well for UConn's favor there to not call their own timeout, because they also had one remaining that, you know, some coaches may have opted to take a timeout.
You know, what's interesting is you're reversing your argument.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Flow of the game, because UConn made the basket,
mm-hmm.
Flow of the game was a good reason not to call timeout.
Yep.
When Duke inbounds the pass, everybody's saying, why not call a timeout? Well, the same thing, flow of the game. And I think even flow of the game was good for Duke. Again, inbounds pass, second pass, third pass, all happened really well. And I would even say, I know it's a big if they had gotten that last pass over the head of the two defenders, the game is over.
Agreed.
Because there were two Duke players standing in the front court all by themselves alone. Yeah. And we now, the narrative would be, wow, how impressive is Duke? Mm-hmm. How well coached is Duke? They didn't need a timeout. And inbounds pass happened smoothly. Second pass happened smoothly. Third pass happened smoothly. And on the last pass, that Duke player, he was aware, instead of mm-hmm. letting himself get fouled, where there's still so many variables left, if he just got it over their head, the game is over. I guess I'm saying, I think instead of this being, the players so much being criticized for making the wrong decision, when I think the criticism should be, he didn't execute.
Mm-hmm. I like that point a lot. And the other point I was going to bring up was, it's all been very negative on Duke. UConn played incredible defense on that. Like, let's you know, call it what it is here. Their traps, even from the first to second pass, they were aggressive. I would have turned the ball over if I was on that court. I know for a fact I would be turning that ball over with all that pressure right in my face. So UConn deserves credit too. They executed that part perfectly as well on late game trapping, when to foul, when not to foul, knowing how much time was left on the clock so you don't have to just immediately foul and turn this into a free throw battle. So UConn deserves, you know, all the credit in the world too for how they handled themselves on the defensive side in that situation.
They really did. And I think, and we'll get into, there's a couple more arguments to be made about, there was 10 seconds left when they took the ball out of bounds. Some people thought they were concerned about advancing it past half court to not get a 10-second violation. Not a factor.
Yeah.
Because there was 10 seconds left. So they had no need to advance the ball beyond half court because of a 10-second violation. The other part to it was, could he have just said, oh, don't panic, just stay there, let yourself get fouled, okay? That's the other argument. And the other thing tying into that no 10-second violation possibility, he didn't need to throw the ball forward. He could have thrown the ball backwards.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
Although, in watching the replay, again, UConn had all of their players in the backcourt. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there probably was a lot of traffic, and looking at the play, there was a lot of traffic in the back court. So there was no traffic in the front court. So I'll tell you what, we're up against the break. We'll finish talking about this, these last couple seconds in that game, because it was so fascinating, when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold. It's quarter number four of our show. We're discussing March Madness and specifically that fantastic Duke-UConn game. And in those last couple seconds, we've been going over every tidbit of it. But now it's after that third pass. You're the Duke player. You're still in the backcourt. Here are the options you have, Sean. You could just hold on to the ball and wait to get fouled, which is probably what would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you still have your timeout left. You could call timeout, or you could advance the ball, or I guess you could still, as we discussed, throw the ball somewhere in the backcourt because you just want to use up, you know, the 10 seconds. Where do you stand? What should he have done?
I would say, and I think this is way easier to say it now as, you know, armchair quarterback type of talk. I think calling timeout, you know I was an advocate for using it earlier, but they didn't. Calling timeout when Boozer had the ball probably would have been the thing that would have helped Duke the most in that situation, because then it's everything resets. And what, there's now 6 seconds left. So draw up a 6 second play to just get the ball in your guy's hands and you live another day. So I think looking back at it, that would have been the best decision, because there wasn't an easy pass for him to make. You know, there were still defenders back and he would have had to fully turn around when you got three guys trying to grab the ball from you and throwing it over. We saw the result of what happened. So I think timeout in that scenario would have been the best thing. But if I was the coach or if I was him, would I have called timeout right then and there? Probably not, because you think you're going to make the pass and you think the game's just going to be.
And, you know, again, we were talking between segments. I use the expression, the heat of battle. You know, we're analyzing this. We're spending 20 minutes to analyze 10 seconds of actual game time. And I think I don't have much of a problem with his decision. I have a problem with the execution of it. Now, he had two guys in front of him, and hey, a little pump fake probably, you know, really dampens down that ability of the defenders. You know, they jump up. It's like taking a shot when you're in traffic. Little head and shoulders fake, get them up and down off their feet. Then you make the play. And as I said, there were Duke players waiting for any pass. You advance it. There's also a great advantage to advancing the ball. That means UConn has to go that much further down the court. Now, you mentioned then once UConn got the ball, and credit to them, that's another great point. We're blaming Duke. We're not complimenting UConn. They made a phenomenal play. Once they got the ball, they stayed under control, and the player who got the ball made the last second shot. He got himself set. There's probably an argument. There was still a second or two left because there was still a little bit of time left after the ball went through the hoop. He probably could have advanced it a bit closer himself. Had he missed the shot that he took, we would probably be blaming him for not taking a couple more dribbles advancing the ball to get a better shot.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's just, it's one of those moments, you know, from a player's standpoint, he was in the flow. And I don't think it would have mattered where he was on the court. Like, he was confident in his shot right there, and he was going to pull up whether there were, you know, a couple extra seconds to take another dribble or not. And obviously, in the end, it worked out incredibly well for him. And that's a shot he'll remember forever. Like, we'll remember it forever. But just incredible basketball right there. And, you know, letting the players play it out. And that was probably the deepest three that he may have made all season long, because when else are you shooting it like that? But it worked out how it worked.
Where I will give him a lot of credit is he took the shot so much under control and went with it. I don't think this is one of those 1 in 100 that he made. I think if you put him in that position, the way he had his momentum going forward, you know, so he can reach the basket without struggling, I'll bet you if you put him out there, I'm not saying he's going to make it more than half the time, but I think he would make a decent percentage of those shots the way he went up with it.
I completely agree. For what the shot was, that was a very high percentage shot. That's not your same as your half court heave at the end of a game. And like you just said, give him credit, because he could have easily gotten the ball and just chucked it up right away. He had enough time to be able to set, get into his proper shooting mechanics. And he did exactly that and executed it to perfection.
He did. He gathered himself. He wonderful. And the last point I'd like to make is to reemphasize what you said. We're spending so much time blaming Duke. I think what we got to do is give credit to UConn. They did everything right there. So, all right, Sean, that's looking at the past. Let's look forward. We've got UConn, Illinois. We've got Arizona, Michigan. This is what you do, my friend. You make your picks. Let's get the spread on these games and take a look at them. Let's start with UConn, Illinois. UConn, the higher seed, UConn coming off that win against the mighty Dukies. Illinois favored by 2.5, Sean.
I am very surprised about this one. And my jaw dropped when I looked at it before we got on to see what the spread was. I would have thought with everything, just from, you know, Vegas standpoint, with public perception, it's obviously massively on UConn right now. You win a game like that, you have the program name. I'm shocked they're not the favorite in this game. And that's not to take away from what Illinois has done. They've had such an impressive dominating run. But I'm very floored by this one right here. And UConn has the best win of either of these teams. Beating Duke was the number one overall seed. They've had arguably the tougher strength of schedule. Like, Illinois got here because they beat a 9-seed Iowa, who, you know, in every other tournament probably doesn't make it where they made it. So I'm very surprised by this one. It caught me off guard, and I don't fully understand the line right here, Jim. I'm not going to lie.
I don't. And remember, UConn also beat Michigan State.
Yes.
Back to back, Michigan State and Duke, two exceptional wins. So, you know, this is one of those you say, is Vegas telling us something here, Sean?
I don't know. And looking at it, you know, looking at the team metrics, Illinois' offense has higher metrics. UConn's defense has the higher metrics. So I don't know if they're just building it out to say that we think Illinois' offense is going to be too much for UConn's offense to match up with. But, you know, I'm looking at this. Illinois is better in rebounds, you know, but that's across every game they've played. And I don't know that they've played a team like UConn with a guy who can get 27 rebounds in the game. So I think a lot of this stuff's going to even out. And I've got to say, I like UConn. I think they just had just such a massive momentum swing. And I think it gives them this opportunity to say, if we can do that, we can do anything. And I think they're going to ride that high right here. So I would side with UConn. I think they're going to win this game. And I'm shocked that they're not favored.
I was surprised by it. I had to check multiple times. I went multiple places just to confirm it. I think also if this were like a Friday game and then they were back playing, you know, from Friday night to Sunday afternoon, did they have time to recover from such an emotional game? But they've got the full week here, okay, to prepare for this. I'm with you. I like UConn in that game. I'm not going to allow this surprising spread to affect me. The other one, Arizona, Michigan, both number one seeds in their region. They were headed for this game. In my bracket, I had them both getting here. Michigan, a 1.5 favorite. Not really surprised by that. Michigan's been playing so well. What do you see in this one?
Yeah, I'm not surprised by it either. Michigan worries me. Michigan worries me a ton. They're such a good team from start to finish. You know, they've been that team that nobody wanted to play. But on the other side, so was Arizona. And I think, you know, we had talked about this before the tournament. I think Arizona would be going into this game 38-0 instead of 36-2 if injuries never happened. And if that did indeed happen, well, maybe we're looking at Arizona as a 1.5-point favorite in this game. So I think Michigan's size is what really is the problem here. And I think they're just such a well-oiled machine. But, Jim, I've been, you know, with the Arizona Wildcats since day one of the tournament, really since the start of the season. They were the team that I just felt was different. I think they find a way to get a win here. It's not going to be easy, but I think they can get the job done. And I think the winner of this is your March Madness winner. I don't see anybody, UConn, Illinois, beating either of these teams, but I do think it's the Arizona Wildcats that get past the Wolverines.
Well, you and I both have Arizona in our bracket.
So winning your hard to not thing. Stick with them right now.
Yeah. I am with you. With the winner of this game, this is the, you know, remaining two of the top three teams in the country got this far. I still like Arizona. I think they have multiple top end players. I think they've got three first round picks, three top half of the first round picks. So the talent is there. I think they're playing well. I think what they showed against a very good Purdue team in that second half, take nothing away from Michigan. They've been playing well, but that to me was an impressive win, what Arizona did against Purdue in the second half. And heck, I've had Arizona from the start of the tournament, so I'm going to have to stick with them. I think it's Arizona, UConn.
I completely agree with you. And also, you know, not to discredit Michigan, but it's similar to, you know, Illinois' path to get here versus UConn's. UConn had a harder path. I would argue Arizona had a harder one too. If you go back to the Sweet 16, I think Arkansas was an extremely dangerous team. Arizona had zero trouble with them. Now, Michigan did not have trouble with Alabama, but we had talked before, Alabama just, they were not close to being built to handle Michigan. Alabama can go put up points against a lot of teams, but when you get a more physical team than them, they just can't produce the same. So I don't think Michigan had been tested at all. And then Purdue versus Tennessee, Purdue is undoubtedly the better win right there and the more competitive win. So I'm with you here. I think Arizona UConn is going to be what we end up seeing in the national championship game.
And you know what? I think this is, again, their blue bloods, nothing against Illinois, but whoever comes out of Arizona, Michigan, if it is in fact against UConn, that is the kind of matchup we want for a final championship game. Well, all right, Sean, thank you so much, not just for today, but for the last month and filling in. I appreciate it. We'll see you next week. We'll see all of you next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider. Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.